My name's Louie.
Hi.
And I've been a grateful member. I can actually say that wholeheartedly. I've been a grateful member of Al-Anon for more than a few years now. And actually since, I think, 1992 is when I stumbled into my first Al-Anon meeting. You know, welcome to Mad Dog days. You know, who would you think about, you know, hanging out in the desert in the middle of August and, you know, in this heat? And this, as I was getting ready today, I was thinking, okay, should I put in a nice coat or should I put, you know, I looked at my, I put on some nice pants and I looked in the mirror and I said, no, I'm not going to wear this. I'm going to be comfortable. You know, I'm going to do the things that I need to do so I can feel okay with myself today. And, you know, that's one of the things I've learned in Al-Anon, how to do those things, you know, make those little choices. And, as I was sitting here thinking about what I wanted to share with you guys, I was thinking about all the noise. We never get away from that, those noisy alcoholics, huh? You know, and in our meeting, in our little meeting hall at Fellowship Hall, it's like I remember going to the first few years of my Al-Anon meeting and thinking, I know patience, tolerance, and acceptance. But sometimes it was unbearable. And today, you know, they really don't bother me as much, you know. And I don't know what's changed because the noise is still the same. They still sing Happy Birthday off key. And my tolerance has risen to a different level. And, you know, I want to thank Kitty and Monessa for asking me. And Scott, a friend of mine, actually was the one that kind of gave me a call and told me that they might be looking for somebody to speak. And, you know, this is the second time I've been privileged to, you know, to come and share my experience, strength, and hope and my story with you. So today, my girlfriend called me and she said, I'll be praying for you. I said, thank you, I need you. And then today I got down on my knees and I prayed, you know, that I could come here, not be, you know, have any expectations, to share with you honestly what my story is, what it was like, and, you know, what happened and what it's like today. And our theme for today is the sunshine of the spirit, you know, and I'll tell you, I don't know how many people are relatively new to Al-Anon or new to the 12-step recovery, but one of the things I want to say to you is keep coming back. You know, if it was anything that I heard the first few months, the first few years, is, you know, keep coming back. And today, I realize how powerful that is. You know, keep coming back. It really is. They're the sweetest, loving, most words that we can actually tell new people. Because if you're like me, when I first came to my first Al-Anon, or first few Al-Anon meetings, you know, we have that stuff going on in our heads, and, you know, what am I doing here? You know, people laughing at things, and then, you know, all the judgmental things that I used to have when I first got here. And here's the way it started for me. I tell this story for the people who know me pretty well. I was somewhere out by PGA West late one evening, and I was going nuts. I was literally going nuts. And, you know, the thing about going nuts is in our head, the way the little squirrel just keeps going around and obsessing about things. And so I knew I had to get to a meeting, and I didn't know where the meetings, where all the meetings were in the desert yet, because I was relatively new to recovery. So I just knew the Fellowship Hall always had a lot of meetings. I didn't know how many, but I knew. So I run over there and I walk in, and you know, I honestly thought it was an AA meeting, and I sat down, and you know, and just to give you an idea, I was so focused on what I was thinking that I just walked in and I sat down as the meeting got started, you know, and this is why I belong in Al-Anon. I was too embarrassed to get up and say I was in the wrong meeting. But as I sat there and I listened to what was going on, I knew I felt better when that meeting ended, you know. And for me, I don't know about you guys, an hour and a half to sit in a room was a long time back then. And today, an hour and a half, most of the times when I walk in, goes just like that. Now, what changed? I don't know. But you know what I do know today is that my life has changed, and the evidence of that is that somebody actually called me and asked me to come share. You know, I think 10 years ago they wouldn't have called me, and they wouldn't want me to get up here and share with you my experience, strength, and hope, because I just had a lot of experience. You know, I didn't have any hope. And the first few months and the first few years of my recovery, I felt, you know, the beginning of the sunshine of the Spirit, you know. And whatever you want to call it today, God or the light or God's grace, it happens here. And it's happened to me. And that day when I walked in, you know, I used to think that I walked into that Al-Anon meeting by accident. But today I know it's by grand design. And today, what I can tell you is that I've made many mistakes in my life. And I continue to make mistakes, but not as many. And what Al-Anon has allowed me to do is to quit beating myself up and to look at the things that I do when I make a mistake, you know, to not to say those words, oh, you're dumb, you know. You know, and just saying a dummy to yourself is not good, you know. And the thoughts that I think about, you know, and I used to think about were not good. And there was a period in my life where, actually in my recovery, my men's group, where my assignment was to pay attention to how men talk about themselves and about their body amongst other men. And it was a little exercise that we were supposed to do for a few months. And as I hung around with other men and I hung around myself, I listened to the messages that I gave myself and then verbalized them in front of other men, and I watched other men verbalize those things. And I realized that I was a little bit too hard on myself, and I watched other men be too hard on themselves and talk bad about themselves. And so that was really an eye-opener for me. From that Friday night meeting, and that was in 1990, late 91, I've been going to the same meeting off and on, more lately on than off, for, you know, almost 11 years now. And what I can tell you, when I was out at PJ West and the things that I was thinking about was, there was no solution to the madness in my mind and the compulsive, obsessive thinking about the person that I was thinking about, which was, you know, when you first come into Al-Anon, you think about maybe the alcoholic or the person who qualified you for coming in, but as you stay, you find out there's, you know, it started a long time ago in my family. You know, as I stayed in Al-Anon, I started seeing as alcoholism is a family disease. I realized that there was a lot more to this than I had actually believed that I thought about. But that first Friday I walked into that Al-Anon meeting, I found relief that day and that night. And it was about 2 or 3 months after that, and maybe a little bit longer because it's been a while now, that I saw a man who was also going to Al-Anon, and you know, I got to that place where I'd been in the program for a while. I'd been going to meetings both in AA and Al-Anon, and I hadn't worked the steps. And when I saw this man, I knew this is the guy I needed to ask to be my sponsor. So I went up to him, and after the Al-Anon meeting, and I said, "Jim, I have you worked the steps?" Because, you know, what you find out after you stay here for a while, there, you know, there's a lot of people who hang out here, but they don't work the steps. And he says, "Yes, I have." He says, "Well, would you be my sponsor?" He says, "I don't know anything about that sponsorship stuff, but I'll be your friend." And I said, "Okay." And then I said, "That's great." And then he says, "You know where the Faith and Recovery bookstore is?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And well, actually, no, I said, "No, I don't," because it was somewhere where I didn't even know where it was. And he told me, I went and bought the book, and I started working my steps. And, you know, I vowed to stay with that guy till I went through all the steps. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but if you have this experience about asking for somebody, you know, at first they're real appealing, and then next thing you know, you start dealing with them, and then they're not so appealing after a while, and you start finding out their character defects and why they're not really a good sponsor. And, you know, it's insanity. You know, and I had done that several times with some other people, some other men, that this time I said, no matter what, I'm going to stick with them. And no matter what, he stuck with me. And we started working. I remember working the first step, and I realized, you know, this is dumb. You know, and I remember thinking that this is dumb. I don't know why I have to do this. And, you know, 15 pins. And I kept, and I was just like, it took me back to high school. I was thinking, God, 1, 2, 3. And I counted all the pages for the first step. There was like 15 pages of drawing, reading, and all this stuff. And I was thinking, what am I doing this for? You know, and then it's part of that disease, the resistance to change, the resistance to, you know, to do the work that's necessary for, you know, to get off these things that I was carrying around that I didn't even know I was carrying around. But I'll tell you that after I did my first step and I called Jim and we finally got together, because see what I learned what we learned here is truly, you know, patience, tolerance, and acceptance. You know, just because you're ready doesn't mean he's ready. And, you know, when we finally got together and I did the first step, I can tell you how I felt. I felt a lot of relief, you know, and I felt a lot of excitement that I finally was doing the steps and I was finally doing something than just going to meetings and talking and then listening, and I was doing the steps. So I went and I got into the next step, and then, you know, we did that and I called them back up, and then, you know, we got to the dreaded fourth step. And that took a while. But I can tell you one thing that happened to me while I was working my fourth step, which was really valuable and it might help you out if you've never worked the steps or you've been stuck, is that as I did that stuff, Jim shared with me that this is not just, you know, a mission to find out all the wrong things you did. This is a mission also to find out the things that are really good about you, your assets. And as I was working the four steps and I was going down and I was really doing everything that I could possibly think about that was needed to be done, I was writing it down, and as I got to a certain point, I got down on my knees and I asked God for God's help, you know, to make me realize that I wanted to do a thorough, you know, and moral inventory of myself. And as I did that, you know, certain situations popped up and I wrote them down, and I'll never forget those certain situations, but what that did is set me up to realize that when I get to that place where I think, you know, I've done my best job, it made me realize that I can sit back and I can sit and pray and ask God to see if I really is a good job. And I didn't know what I was setting up at the time, but today I understand that the most important relationship that I developed talking to Jim, working my steps, praying to God of my understanding, is that I started talking to God about a lot of things. And then I started talking to Jim about a lot of things. And as we got through the fourth step, which was finally, you know, a big deal for me, I realized that I'd been carrying around some things that I really needed some extra help with, and I think God knew that, and that's how I got into this men's group, which was I was suggested to, and it was called, they're called the Desert Men's Recovery Group, or Desert Recovery Men's Group, and with codependencies. And see, I was new to Al-Anon, and I was new to recovery, that I didn't know what codependency really was. But I knew as I sat with you, and a lot of you guys I know, and some of them I don't know, I realized that I had this deal of codependency. And I really found that out in 1995 when I got engaged, and then I got disengaged. And I love one of our guys that used to come to our meeting. He says, you know, I don't know how it is, but I get involved with a girl for just 2 weeks, and it takes me 2 years to get over her. And I laughed about that because, you know, we codependency, when I heard that codependency kills, I didn't believe it. But, you know, when I heard alcoholism, you know, as a disease, I didn't believe that either. So, I was starting to realize that there's a lot of truths that are spoken in these rooms and around these rooms that our disease doesn't want us to believe as truths. But as I sat in these rooms and I shared with you guys, and, you know, the greatest thing about having the meetings is sometimes the meetings after the meetings, in that group that I go to, we sometimes go to Baker Square and we hang around. And what started happening then is that, and I'm not sure about you guys who are relatively new or been around, going to the meeting after the meeting helps you get away from that place where the disease wants us to be isolated and not connected to other people, especially people who might help you out to see another way out of maybe where you're stuck, you know. Because this disease, when you grow up with it, as I stayed longer in Al-Anon, I realized that I grew up with this disease with my grandparents on both sides of the family. And as I did that fourth step, and I shared it with Jim, and then, you know, the most powerful thing that ever happens in this program, and I don't know for ladies if it's any different, but when a man sits next to you and kneels down with you and prays, that is a big, big step for most men. It was for me. Because, see, I didn't have my father who prayed with me, you know, when I was a little kid. You know, that just didn't happen. My mom did that, you know, that I remember, you know. I don't remember my dad ever praying with me. And as I learned to pray in this program, and I mind you that had you asked me to speak 4 or 5 years ago, I would have, you know, maybe got down on the Catholic religion because that's where I was today. Today I know that the Catholic religion is perfectly where it needs to be. There's nothing wrong with it. And even though I grew up in that, when I go back home, my parents still go to the same Catholic church, and I go to the same Catholic church with my parents, and I listen for the message, and I forget about the messenger, which I learned here in these rooms, and I take what I like, and I ask myself why I don't like the rest. And it's usually the same thing, is because I hate kneeling. and you know, those things that sometimes you don't get over with, but I participate today in those things because out of respect for my parents, out of respect for the Catholic Church, out of respect for my own well-being and my parents' well-being. And I didn't have that when I got here. So, and as I worked the steps and I got together with Jim and I found that powerful moment praying with another man, and it started making me realize that these are powerful. This is what makes us powerful, and not only the honesty, but doing these things. You know, not just talking about them, but doing them. And I had never done those things. You know, this disease, if it worked like it did in my life, the last thing you wanted to do was talk about the problem or address any problem, especially that big pink elephant that you know, or didn't even know it was a problem. You didn't know that alcoholism had a lot to do with this stuff. As I said, did the steps. And I guess I should put the time. How long do I have? Okay. I'll leave a little bit of time for what time are we supposed to end?
How about another 10 minutes?
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that, and then we can open it up for sharing. See, I can take direction today. I can be open for suggestions. But as I work the steps, you know, a lot of stuff happening. And, you know, praying with men and learning how to pray with men, you know, by example. And as I kept going to meetings and I finally got to that place in 1993, I got on a plane and I was barely making my child support. I was barely making ends meet. And I was single. I had a daughter out there who her mom wouldn't let me be, you know, her father. She was using and abusing, and I didn't know where she was for 2.5 years, and because of you guys, I put her in God's hands, and they told me, if God wants you to be a full-time father or wants you to be, he'll create the right situations, and, you know, those were hard things to turn over, but I turned it over, and for 2.5 years, I didn't see my daughter. And I knew that I only have one kid on this planet so far, and it was with a lady who I really didn't should have been involved with. But you know, the circumstances were as they may, and I accepted those things. And I was working the program, and I was taking care of. And in 1993, when I got on that, before I left here, I prayed to God and I said, God, you know why I'm going back? I need to make amends to my parents and to some people back in Texas where I'm from. And I got on that plane and I asked God before I left for the ability to recognize the opportunity when that I needed to speak to my parents. Well, as soon as my plane landed, my parents back then, one of the great things about going back home is that my family was one of the kind of family that everybody who was able to would come to the airport and pick you up, and everybody who's able to drop you off at the airport. And you remember when I could look, if I could get it on the right side of the plane, I could look back and I could always see my parents standing in the windows, you know, and my cousin or my sister or my brothers. And that's the way it was. And, you know, those days are gone now because they don't even allow the family to let you see you off anymore, which is kind of sad. But the only two people who were there were my mom and dad. And my sister was sick. My two brothers had things to do, and they asked me if I wanted to go out to eat. We go to the little Mexican restaurant, and as I'm sitting there, it just hit me, boom, this is the time. And as I start, you know, making my amends to my parents, which was, you know, step eight, you know, my father stopped me as I was speaking, and he said, we don't need to talk about that. That's in the past, and the past is the past, and, you know, the whole nine yards. And I listened to my dad, and I said, well, Dad, that's the way you feel about it. You're entitled to feel that way. But I need to do this for me. And if you don't want to stay, that's okay. But I need to do this for me. And you know what? He stayed. And that day, in 1993, I shared with my parents some of the darkest things that I had done and that I had created while I was a teenager and a young man in their home, and never had made a commitment to making it right. And here I was, I think I was 30-something years old, 33, and I was making an amends to my mom and dad, and my mom starts telling my dad things that my dad never knew. My dad's telling my mom things. We're crying. There's something that's happening. And today I can tell you that, you know, my relationship with my parents. And my mom's still the same lady. She's a little hard. My daughter's finding out. She's down in Texas right now with my mom. And I have a relationship with them that, bar none, is one that I love them. And, you know, I think that's something you can't take away from a human being. You know, I think God instills in us that love for our parents, no matter what. And the reason I know that is because my experience with the friends who have been adopted and who, you know, have had when they don't know who their parents, they want to find out, and you hear about it. But I've had friends who, you know, didn't grow up, or their father left early, and, you know, they get to be in their 20s and 30s, and they want to seek him out. They want to find out. You hear about it all the time. And I don't know anything about that because my parents are still living, but I knew what I had when I was growing up. See, and Alan and I learned how to keep the focus on myself. What's my experience? What's my pain? What's my discomfort? But when I went back home and I shared those things with my parents, things changed between my parents, both my mother and my father. And today there's this something that's between us too. And, you know, I come from a family of four brothers and a baby sister. And I don't know what relationship my brothers and my sister have with my parents, but that's their business. And you guys taught me that. It's none of my business. You know, and all I can do is be an instrument of thy peace in my family. And when there's an opportunity to share the love that you guys have learned how to let me share it with, without getting in your stuff, I do it. And the one thing that I do know about this program is my daughter was living in that home, and she has two half sisters and a half brother, and this is where my greatest experience of Al-Anon really taken hold was that I let that daughter go for 2.5 years. And when I got ready to do something, you know, my sponsor at that time, Jim, told me, he says, you know, you're not, being powerless is not the thing as being helpless. You're not helpless. He goes, you can do certain things to find your daughter and to get your daughter. You have rights. And as I started, you know, I hired a private detective to find her, find out where she was living. I paid, you know, several $100s to just find out, just to track her down. And just right when I was going to take some action and hire a lawyer, I got a phone call. And that phone call was from her mother. And I was able to say the words that, you know, I just want to have a relationship with my daughter. I want her to know who her father is. And I don't want to take her away from you. I just want to do, and you guys taught me how to say that, you know, the truth. And what ended up happening is I ended up driving to Big Bear for a couple of weekends, and this little girl didn't know who I was. And I'm going to see how much time. I'm going to tell you a story that happened with my daughter, and I got many of them. And I could, you know, I could talk for 45 minutes, but I don't want to, because I want to hear some of you guys. But when I got the relationship with my daughter, I have a videotape of when I first went up there. And, you know, when your own daughter looks at you like a stranger, you know, it hurts. But in Al-Anon and working the steps, I was able to get past the hurt and realize the truth that this little girl, she honestly didn't know who I was. So I had to do everything that I learned here and in AA, you know, about keeping my side of the street clean. And so what ended up happening was that I went up there, I just hung out, I just tried to be, I didn't try to push myself or force myself. And one of the things that was real key was that she would call me Louie. And after about 2 months, finally her mom let her bring, I brought her down with me, and I started doing that deal, driving up to Big Bear, picking her up, drive back down, you know, hang out for 24, 48 hours, drive back up, drop her off, drive back. And, you know, and there's drinking going on in this house. I know there is. And there's drugs, and there's undesirable people. But because of this program, I was able to mind my own business and take care of things. And I had this conversation with my daughter within about 3 months. I said, do you know what my name is? You know what my name is, right? Louie. I said, but I have another name, and my other name is Dad. And I said, whenever you're comfortable with calling me Dad, I would like you to call me Dad. Then I let it go. And I learned that here, just to even with a 4 or 5 year old, I had to state my needs and what I expected from her. And I didn't hear Dad, right? 2 years later, I drove to Texas to, you know, my parents had never met my daughter. It was the circumstances. And my daughter and I are driving in my truck that I just got. It was just, you know, another blessing. And as we're driving down, we stop at my friend's house. He knows we're on our way to Texas. And I got one of those credit cards for five, you know, where you have to put $25 down or $80 up front. And they gave me $500 limit, but they charged that off right away. So I only have $400 and $80 in cash. But I knew I had to go to Texas and be there for my parents' 40th anniversary and let my parents and my other my other side of the family see my daughter and meet my daughter. And as I got to my friend's house, we stayed there over in Phoenix. My friend came to me. We were sitting on the porch, and Carly was already asleep. And he went like this, and he says, here, when I'm 64, whenever, he says, take this and use that. And I went like this, and it was a wad of $100 bills. And I said, what's this for? And he says, no, I just thought you might be able to use it. And I said, he didn't know my financials. I'd never tell, you know, he's not that kind of friend. And he just gave it to me, and I almost started crying. Well, I did cry, you know. And it was one of those serendipity moments that I tell you that I've had several times over in this program. And we went back home. We did my parents' 40th anniversary. We did a lot of great things. And on the way back, you know, I remember it was that night, it was that year. And on the way back from my parents' anniversary, I heard the word dad. And, you know, it was just like music to my ears. I turned around and I said, "What did you just say?" She goes, "Dad." And I just looked at her. And it was 2 years later, you know, to the day when I explained to her, you know, that my other name was Dad. And, you know, today the little girl says she loves me, you know. I got the phone call on Wednesday that she was riding some, my brother has her down at Six Flags over Texas in Fort Worth. And, you know, I get these phone calls, you know, from this little girl. And today, through the Betty Ford Center's children program, you know, that her mom's drinking, that still affects her. She's angry now at this part of her life with her mother, but that's not my deal. But I keep taking her to the children's program every Wednesday, and that's our ritual. For that, I am very grateful that my life and her life and my girlfriend's life is touched by the program and the principles of Al-Anon, you know, of letting go control. And letting go of the expectations and really letting, you know, be available for God's grace, you know, and God's work. Because the greatest thing, and I'll end with this, is when that stuff goes from here to here and you start seeing, you know, God work in your life, these little miracles. You know, there was a gal who wrote that book of miracles. I forgot what her name was, I have experienced them, and I keep experiencing them, and that's why I keep coming back. And it's been a pleasure talking with you guys, and I'll open up the meeting. Thank you.
So the meeting is open. Thank you so much, Louis. Lots of food for thought. Anyone want to share?
How are you? Good. Thanks. My name is Doug.
Hi, Doug.
Louis, really good. Really good. It really gave meaning to understanding what it is to be grateful to be an Al-Anon. He touched on something that was emotional for me about his daughter. In December, I have a daughter that will be 50. I haven't seen her in about 4 or 5 years. She passed by my house, which is only about a half a mile from where she passed. She lives in Oregon and didn't even stop to make a call. I have two other children that, one, they're grown now, 46 and 44 and 47. And I've been in the program for a little over 8 years. I qualified in this program, I guess, because my mother left my brother and I when I was four. She's an alcoholic. A recovering alcoholic. She'll have 55 years in September. And just in the last 8 years, I've come to know who she was and who she is. And I came to Al-Anon by invitation. The lady that invited me is now my wife. But she hung out with my mother. And I guess she thought, my wife has 25 years in this program. And she said, "Well, if you're going to hang out with your mother, then you need to go to Al-Anon." And so I said, "Okay, what's Al-Anon?" And I went to Al-Anon, and I thought, "What am I doing here with a bunch of whiny nuts?" And then found out after about 6 months I was one of them. But this program is a great program. 12-step work, whether it be AA, GA, NA, Al-Anon, whatever, I know that 12-step work is great, and I know that it's great in Al-Anon and AA. I go to AA meetings because it says learn more about alcoholism. I go to Al-Anon so I can deal with my mother. I wish I knew how to deal with my kids. I wish I knew how to deal with my mother. I go to Al-Anon, she goes to AA. We just had to make a real tough decision recently. My mother's 91, and we had to, she can't take care of herself anymore. And up to 3 months ago, she was driving her own car. So we arranged that she should go into assisted living. Well, she hates me now, and she hates my wife, but she's been in there for a month, and today was the first time that she was actually positive about where she was. So I know that this program is the thing that gives me the courage and the strength and the wisdom to do things that I wouldn't know how to do before, literally. I mean, I was senior vice president of foreign operations for a major corporation in the oil and gas business. And I knew how to make decisions for men, for women, jobs, contracts, what have you. But I never really knew how to make decisions on my own personal life. While I had a very prestigious job, I obviously had a very low self-esteem factor. And it was covered up by $400 suits and $200 pair of shoes and driving a big car, spending a lot of money. But I can honestly say, I never shed a tear. You can believe this. From the time I was 4 years old until I was 65. And when I came into this program, you allowed me to share my emotions. And for that, I am truly grateful. And with that, I welcome all of you to the Al-Anon convention, and I hope that you all enjoy it as much as I do. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Anyone else? Mary?
Thank you, Louie, very much. I've been in Al-Anon since 1978. Got a bit of a cold. Marianne is my name. When I first got here tonight, I was panicking because Lucy wasn't here. And she's my sponsor. And I have a lot of issues of loss. And she's been so solid for me that I want us to remember her tonight. And when we pray, I just had dinner with her 2 nights ago, and she shared about her niece and her reunion that she'd been to. But things happen, and they happen quickly. Al-Anon has been so good for me. And I so wish I'd been in when I was little girl, when my father died when I was 9 from alcoholism. And my brother and I were always very confused. He became an alcoholic and I married one. We did all the things the books say. In fact, we're very booky, both of us, and decided that degrees would be the answer. So we have quite a few degrees between us. But I've always hung with Al-Anon. I came in shortly before my husband got sober in 78. And I've not always embraced it with open arms. Because to me, Al-Anons are really brave. They stick in. They uncover defects that are very mind-boggling. Very intricate. You know, things about choking the life out of people. You know what I'm saying? And I'm thinking, oh God, this is my defect. But it's the truth. And it takes brave people to keep hanging in with it. And so it has helped me so much. And it has helped me with my temper. Because I have a pretty bad temper. And I'm trying to learn I don't know if I'll ever learn it before I pass over to the other side, to keep my mouth shut. But I try, and I keep getting more challenges toward that. Lucy tells me very quietly that I will learn to detach and that I will learn to deflect. I've always been one to take on the alcoholic. I'm very pugilistic. If they want to fight, I will fight back, especially with my mouth. She is so calm and so quiet. I'll often say, you know, what's the use of a sponsor? She doesn't say anything to me. You know, we'll meet and then I won't. It's always me finding my own answers. But thanks for letting me share. And I really miss her tonight. You know, I kept looking for the little white head. And then I got all scared because of my own abandonment. Did something happen to Lucy? And yes, indeed, something did. Life happened. Another loss. You know, and without people to reach out with, what do we have? I'll put a message on her recorder, and when she comes home, I'll send her a card. And that's what we need to do, is keep interfacing with each other, because that's all we have, I think. Thank you.
We have time for one or two more, maybe. One, anyway.
Hi, I'm Sharon.
Hi.
Thanks for sharing, Louie. That was really, really good. And I heard some really good things, and the thing I was thinking about today is, since I've been in Al-Anon, I've become willing. And today I became willing to get my ass out of bed at 5 o'clock this morning and accompany my husband to play golf for Mad Dog Days for the first time. And it was funny because I almost bailed last night. I was thinking, no, I don't want to get out of bed. I'm too old to do this. You know, my head was going, what do you want to get up at dawn early in the morning and go hit a ball around? We don't even golf, you know, it's just on and on and on and on. And finally, when it was time to wake up, I actually woke up an hour early, went back to sleep, and then woke up before the alarm went off. And my husband was like sound asleep. And so I had to wake him up at 5 o'clock and go, you know, come on. You know, you want me out the house at 5:30, and he's still sound asleep at 5 o'clock. So that's what it made me think of. You know, today I'm willing to do things that I really don't think I really want to do. And then once I get there, I really have a good time. And it was beautiful out there, and it was just a whole lot of fun. And four of us who don't know how to golf worth a darn got to play together and cheat together, and you know. We thought maybe we'd get a prize for highest score, you know, and they didn't even give us a prize for that, you know, after all of that work we did. But it was a whole lot of fun, and I'd do it again, and it even kind of opened up a little door for me, you know, saying, you know, well, honey, would you like to maybe play 9 holes every once in a while? You know, we could go hit a ball around, you know, it's good stress relief or something, you know, and I'm grateful that my husband's not addicted to golf. Thank you for letting me share.
I'm Monessa. But I thank you in a special way, too, Louis. Most of what hit me was what you had to say about your parents. Because both of my parents were alcoholic, my father before I was born and my mother by the time I was 2 and a half, when I try to grasp my relationship with them over all the years, it's tough. I mean, I was so in charge of everything from 2 and a half on, I think, that they're distant to me. And that's very sad for me. And it is because of Al-Anon, though, that I can be grateful to them because I have this connection with healing from the disease. What I know about them is what beautiful, good people. However, the disease just took them down. And, you know, I went with them, and so did my brother. However, I'm here. And that is a total grace. And I, what you were saying about no matter what, we're connected to them. And I know that it's Al-Anon that's helped me to be accepting of this reality in my life, with my character defects, with all the impact of the disease, with all that it's brought me in terms of solution and how to live life and cope in ways that I didn't know as a kid. So, you know, my brother calls it bittersweet. And it is for me, too. It really is. It's a tragedy, and it's a gift. So thank you very much, Louis. It was very helpful for me, and I have your daughter right here. Before I read the closing, I do want you to be sure to look at the last page, which tells you there are more wonderful speakers in our Serenity sessions and our mini sessions. So please look at the schedule for tomorrow and Sunday and join us. And thank you to everyone that shared. In closing, I would like to say that the opinions expressed here were strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you liked and leave the rest. The things you heard were spoken in confidence and should be treated as confidential. Keep them within the walls of this room and the confines of your mind. A few special words to those of you who haven't been with us long. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. If you try to keep an open mind, you will find help. You will come to realize that there is no situation too difficult to be bettered and no unhappiness to be too great to be lessened. We aren't perfect. The welcome we give you may not show the warmth we have in our hearts for you. After a while, you'll discover that though you may not like all of us, you'll love us in a very special way, the same way we already love you. Talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the understanding, love, and peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. Will all who care to join me in the closing prayer, the Lord's Prayer?
Oh, my husband's so